Hi, and welcome to the November PodMag. I'm Karen Foley, and in this seasonal edition of our monthly audio news magazine from Arts and Social Science at the Open University, we take a look at religious festivals. This month we've had Halloween, Diwali, and of course the countdown to Christmas is at the forefront of many people's minds. But how important are these festivals, and to whom do they matter? To find out more, I'll be talking to Graham Harvey, Gwilym Beckelidge and Paul-Francois Tremlett, all from the Department of Religious Studies at the Open University. But first, here are some news stories. An OU study, iSpy, undertaken by two psychology academics, found that many people think that the internet makes affairs more likely. So we've commissioned a five-part drama, directed by BAFTA-nominated Faye Gilbert, to explore how online behaviours are interpreted and the effects web flirtation can have on real-life relationships. It's launching on Monday the 28th of November at 7pm, and we'll be asking for your views as the drama unfolds. We'll be promoting this on Facebook, YouTube, and then it will also be available on OpenLearn. Interfaith Week begins on the 13th of November. If you're interested in learning more about a range of religious buildings in London, you may want to check out the Exploring Religion in London series of videos that use 360-degree technology. You can access these on YouTube, the OU Facebook page, and again on OpenLearn. Also on the theme of religious studies, Paul-Francois Tremlett, who I interview later in the PodMag, has written a blog as part of the Methods in Motion series on researching ritual and democracy. The link's available in the transcript, or you can have a look at the CSIG website. In the first of our interviews, Graham Harvey, the head of Department of Religious Studies, discussed Halloween with me. Graham Harvey, I wanted to talk to you about Halloween. Now, do you think that Halloween has become more of a commercial festival than a religious one?
I think it, for most people it probably is commercial, all the stuff in the shops and plastic pumpkins rather than real ones. I mean, even that, we've adopted American pumpkins rather than turnip lanterns. But it's still a sense of celebrating the beginning of winter. For some people it's about honouring the dead, whether they're Catholics honouring the souls and the saints or pagans honouring ancestors. So there's a big mix of different things going on.
So we walk into our local supermarket then around this time of year, and it's really obvious all of the merchandise that's around for us. And some of this is going to pick up some of the more traditional, I guess, religious reasons about why we might celebrate Halloween. What is it about the way that we're seeing some of these images that might resonate with people in terms of how they're then expected to celebrate?
Yeah, I think that there's two different things going on. One is all this stuff about death and mortality. So we're looking at ghosts and skeletons and we're thinking about life and death. But there's also the trick-or-treat side, which is, again, a part of the beginning of winter, the games people used to play. It's a bit different now. In the old days, it used to be adults trick-or-treating their neighbours, especially being unpleasant to the ones who'd been unpleasant, sort of getting a bit of revenge on them. And now it's a prettified kind of thing for kids and, you know, handing out sweets rather than money for beer. But there's a sense in which that carries on, and there are bits of old traditions that survive in a new sort of glittered up way.
And those traditions, of course, were the Christian festival of All Hallows and also the pagan festival. Are people still celebrating for those very traditional reasons?
There are some people doing that. I mean, particularly Roman Catholics honouring the souls and the saints on the 1st and 2nd of November. But pagans, which is a kind of growing tradition now, honouring the festival of Samhain, which is a beginning of winter festival, which has become another time to celebrate the dead, the ancestors, to go and honour those of our relatives who've gone on. For the rest of the population, probably less so, it's more fun and games. But even for them, you know, there is this sense that it's winter, it's dark, let's have a bit of fun, let's have some candles, and let's think about mortality in a light-hearted kind of way.
You were talking earlier about how children are, you know, often doing the trick-or-treating, so maybe the demographic in terms of who's participating in Halloween has changed. At a lot of schools, you know, there are Halloween discos and the parents are also dressing up as well. I wanted to ask about the way that we're, I guess, encouraging children to celebrate religious festivals. We've got Halloween and then Guy Fawkes and all sorts of other religious festivals, you know, marking the winter. And some of them, like you say, are in a very fun way and some in a more serious way, like Remembrance Day, for example. What do you think about the way that we're educating children about celebrating religious festivals?
Well, we're probably not very good at it because as a culture, as a British culture, we're not very good at doing rituals. You know, we've had 500 years of not thinking ritual as a good thing to do. But, you know, we are, I think, in the last decades, returning to thinking about seasonal festivals, marking the changes, particularly in midsummer and midwinter, Halloween, beginning of winter. And we're getting there, thinking about kids being reintroduced to death and thinking of their relatives. So it's not just an anonymous crowd of odd dead ghosty people, but actually our great-grandparents, our grandparents, our close relatives, and thinking about them in a realistic way. We're not quite there with some of the Southern European traditions where everybody would go to a graveyard, take flowers to their relatives. But I think I've seen some changes in people really beginning to engage with the dead.
So in terms of then these changes about the ways in which we're celebrating, what would be the most useful thing that you think the UK could adopt in terms of the future of celebrating Halloween?
I think if you were to ask that of a Catholic or of a pagan, that they'd say that actually rebuilding this community that involves the living and the dead, or those who have died, those who have gone on, but are still in some sense alive, would make our sense of who we are much richer, that we're not just a bunch of people living now and then we disappear, but there's a continuity, the culture is handed on by our previous generations. That would make a big difference.
Graham Harvey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Diwali is another prominent festival at this time of year, and Gwilym Bekalidge and I talked about how it can be celebrated. Gwilym, anyone can participate in celebrating Halloween or even Christmas, but Diwali seems to be a lot more owned by the Hindu religion. Would you say that's a fair comment?
No, I mean, Diwali is celebrated not just by Hindus, but in different ways by Sikhs and also by Jains in India. And I think now it's a festival where many Hindus would invite non-Hindus to join them. It's a kind of showcase. It's their most, I suppose, most popular festival. And in some ways, the most accessible.
How is it celebrated then in the UK?
Well, it's celebrated in Leicester, for example. It's one of the biggest celebrations of Diwali outside of India, simply because of the size of the community there. The other thing is, of course, in Britain, most Hindus, in fact, are of Gujarati ancestry or descent. And so the style of Hinduism we see in Britain is largely Gujarati. If we lived in Western Europe, it could be quite different.
So then the ways that people celebrate would differ depending on where they're based. What are some of the practices that are most common to see around this time of year in terms of celebrating Diwali?
I think it's more a question of a cluster of festivals. I mean, it lasts over 4 or 5 days, depending on how you count it. So, I mean, cleaning the house, doing decorative patterns, that's part of it. And then there's also special days when a particular deity is worshipped. And that's where you might find the difference. I mean, Gujaratis would offer worship to Lakshmi, goddess of wealth and prosperity. People, Bengali Hindus, they would offer worship to the deity Kali on the same day. So you have that kind of difference according to regional history. But I said in Britain, largely you're going to see a Gujarati style. So cleaning houses, certainly. Then the worship, the main day is the worship of Lakshmi. And that's followed by a puja after that called Govardhan Puja, which is also called the Mountain of Food, which gives you a good idea what it's about, where people bring in prepared meals to offer to the deities in gratitude.
We've been talking a little bit about how we educate children about celebrating religious festivals, and one of the things that they are often doing in schools is candles and light. How important is the whole idea of light for this festival?
It's very important. It's also very important, I think, in Hindu tradition more generally, because offering light to the deities is one of the key aspects of ritual, the ritual of worship, and arati, offering light to the god. I mean, Diwali means it was taken from a line of lights, which again gives you a clue. So the lights here are lights used to decorate homes, to decorate interiors of temples, shrines. Also, of course, lights are placed on leaves and launched onto the river in India. But the thing to remember here is, of course, that the main festival night is meant to be the darkest night of the month. So you need light to brighten it.
And you've mentioned about spring cleaning and about some of the other social things that people are doing around this time of year. Diwali is a very happy event, often with this idea of, you know, triumph over adversity and light over darkness, etc. How important is it, you know, socially for people to be able to have these religious practices that they can do to have a positive outlook on life?
I think it's hugely important. If we think about the timing of it during the year, certainly in the northern Indian kind of seasonal cycle, it would fall after the worst excesses of the summer heat and rain. So it's a time when people are ready to relax. It's now also a time when, of course, it's a hugely important point in the consumer cycle, massive shopping spree. And of course, you'd see this in Britain too. People give gifts, they get new clothing. They also buy consumer goods in great quantities, and this is where in India you'd see the shopping malls absolutely packed. But it's also a time for family. I mean, people come together, they relax. So in India, they would have state holidays and so forth. So it's a very important time for coming together in that sense. And also, I think it's a time simply for celebrating being in the community.
We've talked about Diwali having so many different facets to it, and I wanted to end by asking you, what was your particular favourite aspect about celebrating Diwali?
Well, I've seen it celebrated in India with the fireworks on the streets and so forth, but I think my favourite at the moment is my most recent, where I was in Preston and joining the Swami Narayan Baps community there for Diwali a week ago. And I was there for what is called the Mountain of Food, which is absolutely fascinating. But also it was a civic occasion. I mean, the Lord Mayor of Preston was there, a lot of council members were there, the temple was packed. But the place was simply a blaze of lights and mountains of food which had been prepared, you know, by the devotees, stretching down not just on the main areas in front of the shrines, but stretching down on a huge kind of ornate pathway leading down through the temple. I mean, it was absolutely glowing with light and also glowing, frankly, with food as well.
It sounds glorious and absolutely delicious. Gwilym, thank you very much.
Finally, Paul Francois Tremless and I talked about Christmas, in particular about the commercial aspects of this festival.
Paul, we're going to talk about Christmas. Now, Santa is possibly one of the most iconic images when we think about Christmas. And when we were talking to Graham, we talked about how so much of these religious festivals is very evident in our society, in particular in supermarkets. Do you think that Santa is more of an iconic image than Jesus at the moment?
I think so. I think if we think about Christmas, the first figure that we think of is Santa Claus. We all know that Santa Claus, or the modern image we have of Santa, was essentially manufactured by Coca-Cola in the 1930s. And Santa has become this global icon, pretty much translates into lots of cultures around the world. It's also an interesting fact that in 1951 in Dijon in France, he was burned in effigy by priests, angry that Santa was essentially secularising what they felt should be a Christian festival. Whether we think they were right or wrong is perhaps a sociological as much as a theological question, of course.
So do you think then, in terms of the way that we're encouraged to consume, you talk about Coca-Cola and the whole nature of Santa linking with consumption, the way that we're expected to consume and have this excess of both goods, gifts and family and abundance over Christmas, how much pressure does that put on the average family and on society more generally?
Well, Christmas is a peculiar time. It's a ritual moment. Whether we think it's still a Christian occasion, it's certainly a kind of a sacred occasion because of this feasting that we do, because of this partying that we do, but also that sense that we need to be with others, family, friends, and that we need to give. And, you know, this idea of the gift, which is very different from what we normally do for the rest of the year, which is really just buying things for ourselves. And then the objects are really commodities. But in Christmas, commodities become gifts. And that means Christmas is quite a magical time of year because it's about transforming one kind of thing into another kind of thing. And that's a very special, even in our secular society, that's a very special thing that we do.
You mentioned the word spirituality. And of course, Christmas obviously has the religious story as well associated with it that's often taught and done through nativity plays and practiced, especially with our children. To what extent then do you think that Christmas retains some of that religious or more spiritual aspect?
Well, Christmas is peculiar, isn't it? Because often unbelieving adults, whether they unbelieve in Jesus Christ or whether they unbelieve in Santa Claus, nevertheless, through things like nativity plays and leaving a mince pie out for Santa Claus when he brings the presents for the children, we cultivate belief in children. And so I don't think it's a question of whether a real meaning has been lost. It's more that Christmas is a special ritual occasion, even in a secular society. We have these kinds of rituals that are very important to maintaining our sense of identity, our sense of wholeness with others, our sense of relationship to others. And that's what Christmas does. It allows us to connect with others through gifts.
Throughout all of the narratives of Christmas, we're talking about the spirituality, the rituals, the displays of wealth, etc. There's a lot that's been written as well about this from a more literary perspective in terms of how we view Christmas. Sometimes that can be a very, very bleak view, sometimes a very happy view. They're very different takes on the whole religious aspect as well as the cultural activities that surround Christmas. What's your most memorable, narrative tradition around the whole Christmas festival?
Well, you know, every Christmas we get new presentations of a Dickens story, for example, on the television. And of course, Christmas appears in lots of films and literature. So I thought I'd conclude with this small quote from A Christmas Carol by Dickens. And he writes, "Christmas is the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they were really fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys." And I think that quote sums up this idea of Christmas being a special time, but also for Dickens a sense that why can't we behave in that Christmas-like spirit for rather longer than just one or two days a year?
So even though Christmas can be a really happy time, it could also alienate people who may not have those family networks or the wealth to be able to act in the way that they want to.
Christmas puts a lot of pressure on people to be with others, to participate in activities, sharing food, sharing gifts with each other. And that makes it a wonderful time, but also it can be quite a difficult time for some people in our society.
I agree. Thank you so much, Paul.
Been a pleasure.
That's all we have time for in this edition of the PodMag. I hope you've enjoyed it, and to find out more, look at Facebook, YouTube and OpenLearn. In the December PodMag, we'll focus on human rights, but until then, have a great month. Bye for now.